Now being recorded. So let's begin the interview. Welcome. This interview is about Fidelis Wainaina. Fidelis Wainaina passed away on the 5th of March this year, 2008, and I just wanted to do some audio interviews. The person I am speaking to at this time is my mother, and my mother was a very good friend of Fidelis Wainaina. So, mom, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, so could you please tell people a bit more about Fidelis Wainaina?
I met Fidelis Wainaina some more than 20 years ago. We were in high school together, and she was just a few years ahead of me. And that was, she went to school for her high school in a school called Cheterit Girls St. Joseph, which is in Kapsabet High School. And then after we left school, I lost track of Fidelis for quite a number of years. But then we met once more maybe 15 years ago when she had come to Nairobi.
Tell me a bit more about when you first met Fidelis, your initial impressions of each other, how you interacted with each other when you first met.
When I met Fidelis, she was more of an older sister to me. She was in Form 5 and she was a very humble lady. She didn't look at me as that little sister insignificant. She looked at me as Lois, here I am. She supported me. She looked out for me. She was such a humble woman, a very humble lady. And that's what I've known about Fidelis all her life.
And was she a woman of the church back then?
No, when we were in school, Fidelis was Catholic. I think she was brought up in a Catholic family. So she was really not what you'd have called a very dedicated Christian. She was just a Sunday going sort of a Christian then.
Okay, and that changed, of course, later on.
The next time I met her, that is after about 15 years ago,
Yes.
Fidelis had given her life to Jesus Christ and she had become a very fervent believer of Jesus.
Okay. So tell me now about your relationship now, 15 years after you initially
So
met.
when I met her, she had already finished college. She had gone to Egerton College to do her diploma in agriculture. She had finished that. And then she had worked for about 2 years as an agricultural officer. And then she had decided that she wanted to work for the church. So she had resigned and joined a ministry called the Navigators. And at that particular time I met her, she was working as a full-time minister of the gospel of Jesus. And so she was working in Eldoret. She was doing this, what we call discipling ministry, that is bringing up younger Christians to know more about God, and that's when I met her.
Okay. And why exactly did she make that decision to go from being an agricultural officer? Because I'm assuming the life of ministry is not as stable as the life of being an agricultural officer. I might be wrong, I don't know.
That's true, because as an agricultural officer, of course, she had a salary every month. She was earning some money, but when she decided to go to the ministry, she went to a life of where there was no salary every month. She lived on being supported by people outside there, people who wanted to support her, which I was one of her supporters at a later stage. So she was just had a heart for people. She was a lady who lived not for herself, not what she got out of what she did, but she had a heart for people. So when I asked her, Fidelis, why did you resign from being an agricultural officer to go to the Navigators Ministry, which was not even paying you a salary? What Fidelis said is that she wants to see people's lives transformed. And so that's the reason why she had left to go and minister to people.
Okay, wow. So, okay, continuing on. So she's now working for the Navigators. So
So
how
she
did.
was, that particular time, she was working for the Navigators. She actually introduced me to the lady who I refer to as my spiritual mother, because at that time I was also a young Christian and I was struggling in my walk with Jesus. And so she took me to this lady who was also a Navigators minister. And that's where I actually got discipled for 5 years, myself and my children. And so she was with the Navigators maybe for 1 to 2 years. And then she left the Navigators. And the reason why she said she left the Navigators was mainly because she was not able to live by being supported by people. She wanted to preach the gospel, but at the same time, she was a believer in working with her own hands to be able to support herself. And that,
Self-sufficiency.
so that collided a bit with the vision of the Navigators, which
Okay.
the Navigators believed in being supported by the people they discipled, whereas Fidelis believed in discipling people, but being able to work for her own upkeep. And
Okay.
so she had to leave.
Okay. So now she has left the Navigator. So to begin with, she started at Chepterit. She's gone to college. She's become an agricultural officer. She's now gone into full-time ministry, and now she's left that. So what did she
Well,
move on to?
She left the navigators abruptly, and so it was very difficult for her, especially financially at that particular time, because she's not with the navigators, so she's not being supported by the people she was discipling. And here she is, she doesn't know what to do. She has left just abruptly. And at that particular time, you know, we were praying together, and I was asking her, do you want to go back to be an agricultural officer? And she was saying, no, the Lord hasn't said I go back. She still felt she had a ministry to the people in Kisumu, because she had moved from Eldoret to Kisumu, mm-hmm. where she was a navigator. And so when she left the navigators, her base was in Kisumu. And she said she felt
and
that the Lord...
Just to interject quickly, of course, her name is Wainaina, so she is a Kikuyu woman. So
yeah,
this was a Kikuyu
woman working among the Luos.
Yes, okay.
The Luos is a different group of people. So the Kikuyus are a different group of people. These are the two big tribes in Kenya.
Yes.
And so here she is. She's working among the Luos. And I'm asking Fidelis, what do you want to do? You've left the navigators. She's saying she feels the Lord has called her to the Luo community. And then it was very difficult for her for about a year or two. She didn't know what she was supposed to do. But all of a sudden, I remember once she told me, Lois, I've been working in the community, and there's a lot of poverty. Now, one thing we have to realize is that Kisumu was one of the places, the very earliest places to be affected with AIDS in Kenya. Mm-hmm. There was a very high rate of AIDS. And that meant that there were a lot of families where the fathers and the mothers had died, and only children were in those families. There were a lot of children-led families in Kisumu. And therefore, Fidelity said she didn't know what to do with these families, but she felt the Lord was calling her towards those families which were being led by children, were children alone. Many of these children were not going to school. Many of these children were sleeping hungry. She didn't know what to do because she didn't actually have the finances. And so she was just praying and saying, Lord, I don't know what to do, but I know I have a ministry among these people. I am as poor as they are, but at least she had the education and she had some knowledge of... So she was on a higher level because she had the education than these children.
And just to interject, how exactly did she get through the language barrier initially?
You see, the Kenya somehow has an advantage of the fact that we have Kiswahili as a national language. So everybody in the country can speak Swahili. So though Fidelis was a Kikuyu speaking Kikuyu, she could speak Swahili. The Luos in Luoland can speak Luo and they can also speak Swahili. And therefore, Fidelis was able to communicate with the people she was ministering with through the Swahili language.
Okay.
Because that is the common language.
Okay.
So at that very hard time, within the 2 years when she didn't know what to do, she has left the navigators, she doesn't have money, she doesn't want to go back to her job as an agricultural officer. And she asked the Lord, how do I minister to the people in Kisumu? What Fidelis started doing is, as poor as she was, at least she was better off because she could afford some breakfast in her house through her things in the past. She had some bread in her house. She'd wake up in the morning, pick up 2 loaves of bread, go to the village to these children who had no mothers, go to the village with some bread and some milk, give the children some breakfast in one home, then move on to the next home, give the children breakfast. But this came a bit later on. Initially, she was just trying to go to talk to the children, and every time the children saw Fidelis coming, they would run out through the widows because they thought she's from the government. She's coming to take them back to school. Children were not in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was wondering, how do I get through to the children? Because each time, the children saw her coming to knock the door, they just went out through the widows. So they ran away.
Uh-huh.
And that was very frustrating. She's trying to reach out to the children, and the children don't want to talk to her. So she thought, okay, I'll come with bread. I'll come back.
Oh, so it's bribery.
So, the bread and the milk was somehow to get the attention of the children who were running away. And yet, they were not in school because she was living in those villages with them.
Okay.
So she started coming with bread in the morning and some tea. And so she would make breakfast with these children. Like, she would go to one home, make some breakfast, eat the breakfast with the children and talk with them and find out at what point they are, how they are managing because they didn't have the children. And then she'd go to the next home and the next home and the next home. And I think she started with about, if I can remember, maybe about 5 or 6 homes, doing the same thing every morning with the children. And then once she had built the rapport with the children, she took them back to school. Now, unfortunately, the schools nearby didn't want these children because children without a father and a mother normally are not very well behaved. So the schools nearby didn't want these children because they would be a bad influence to the rest of the children in the school. And so she would have to move out of that particular area to take the children to another constituency or to another school which is a bit further, which didn't actually know these children. And so every morning she'd come, give all her children breakfast, and then off she'd take them.
And how many children did she have by this point?
I think there were 6 families, so I don't know exactly what the number of children, but were from about 5 or 6 families.
So they're being taken care of by the extended family?
No. Extended family somehow, with so much AIDS happening in Kenya, the extended family is almost unable to take care of the AIDS victims because the burden has become too much. Every family, there is an AIDS case. And so it is becoming a bit hard for the extended family to take care of these children because every family has an AIDS person. So they were not being taken care of by the extended family, and that's why Fidelis got concerned that these children nobody's caring about.
Also, they were just living. They were living in where their parents used to live, all on their own.
All on their own, where their parents used to live. So they would sleep sometimes without food. They were not going to school, and nobody cared that they didn't go to school because the extended family could not cope with the numbers. The numbers were too high.
Okay, so lost sheep in every sense of the word, really.
They were really lost in every sense of the word, and so that's where Fidelis came in and, you know, took them to school, told the headmasters in those particular schools, in case of anything with these children, please give me a call, I'm responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And at least she had built a rapport with those 6 families. And then during the day, what would happen is when children have gone to school, she started talking to the neighbors, the mothers at home, finding out how they are coping, because the neighborhood was quite a very poor neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then she realized that, you know, every home was struggling. They were not getting enough food. There was not enough food in those homes, even the families with mothers and fathers. There wasn't enough food. And so Fidelis, she thought, what can I do? How can I help these families? And thank God that she had the skills as an agricultural officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she started with, what she had. She had the skill of an agricultural officer. And so she thought, the only thing I can do is to help these families, is to help these people do better farming methods. At least they have the small pieces of land, because
mm-hmm.
each one of us has maybe 1 acre of land or less.
Mm-hmm.
How can they make enough food out of those pieces of land, so that the children could have at least some fruits and some vegetables to eat and enough food to eat and
mm-hmm.
still go to school.
And just very quickly, what exactly is under that job description as an agricultural officer? Because actually, when I first heard that term, I actually thought an agricultural officer is like an inspector. It's like a health inspector or something like that. So what is an agricultural officer? Just so people have a clear idea.
Agricultural officers in Kenya normally are the people who go out to the field to show farmers how to farm better, how to grow food better, so that if you have a small piece of land, you can be able to get more output from the land
than
when you just do traditional sort of farming.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to show people the latest farming methods, how to mulch, how to make manure, how to plant better breeds of bananas or maize. So there are people actually who are on the ground helping the farmers to do better farming methods. And many years ago, in Kenya, the government used to provide agricultural officers to the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
As poverty has progressed on in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
for the last maybe 20 years or more, no agricultural officers have been provided by the government.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, you find that the food production in Kenya has deteriorated over the years. And
uh-huh.
therefore, that's why you find there's a lot of famine in Kenya. Farmers are not able to take care of themselves.
Okay.
Because there's nobody going out to the farmers to tell them, this is how to farm better. This is how you can get a better output.
Okay, so that explains now how like that area in Kisumu got so poor, because their food production capability has deteriorated. There's a lot of AIDS, so there's a lot of death, and basically people have no way of taking care of themselves. So that's the situation that now Fidelis is in.
This is the situation Fidelis is in, because, you know, with 1 acre of land, if you farm it year after year, year after year, and you're not putting in any manure, or you're not even doing rotation of the farming,
mm-hmm.
that small piece of land stops producing. And
yeah.
so people will keep on planting, but they're getting nothing out of it.
Okay.
And so that is the situation that the mothers and the fathers, they are in. They have very small pieces of land
uh-huh.
produced, but there's nothing that comes out of it. And so that's where Fidelis found herself. I have the skill. Why can't I show these people the skill?
She
was not being employed by anybody. She didn't have an income, but she had the skill. And so she decided to use what God had given her, the knowledge, to impact to the community.
Uh-huh.
So during the day, she'd go, she made friendships with these farmers, though they were from different tribes and different groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
She made friendships with the farmers, and she started, like, for example, with one family, she started showing them how to farm better. How can we grow bananas in this area? Which they were actually not growing bananas, surprisingly. How can mm-hmm. we grow bananas in this area? Because this is a banana growing area.
Mm-hmm.
And bananas produce year after year. These are groundnuts area. how can we grow enough groundnuts in this area for you to be able to support your family, you know? And so she started showing them how to do mulching. She started showing them how, she went to, there was a CARI agriculture, CARI is the Kenya Research Institute, the government body that produces good breeds of plants. She went to CARI and she would get, for example, 1 kilogram of groundnuts. Now, good groundnuts, the ones that can produce well, the research ones, the ones produced by the scientists.
Okay.
So she would get, let's say, 1 kilo or 2 kilos of groundnuts. She would come with them to the village and give to the to a few families, maybe 10 families, and then get those 10 families together and do a small demonstration farm in one of the their farms, and then show them how can we grow these groundnuts in a way that they can produce much more than what you people are doing at the moment. So together she would get all the families together, do a demonstration farm here of groundnuts. Then tomorrow they would go to another family, do a demonstration of, let's say, the CARI bananas. That is the bananas that have come from the agriculture officer. Because the CARI Institute, which is a government body, was willing to give her demonstration plants or crops.
Okay.
So she would demonstrate bananas in one farm. She would demonstrate groundnuts in another. She would demonstrate maize in another. And so in the whole week, she would be going around among these groups of people in the village, demonstrating, doing small demonstration farms.
Okay.
And so with time, these groundnuts which are produced here, they became, you know, because they're being produced in a scientific way. They're doing manure, they're doing mulching, they're doing proper manure. And so they started producing a lot. And Fidelis' theme was, if we produce in your place groundnuts, let's say you get 10 kilograms, you're going to share with your neighbors. You have to give your neighbors 1 or 2 kilos.
And that's one of the most important ideas that Fidelis pretty much came up with, is this idea here.
That's the most important, that whatever we get, because we're being given by CARI, or some donors are giving us, like, should come to our friends and say, Lois, I have this need. I need to buy some plants for the community. Can you help me? Then I'll give her a bit of money. Anything that they were given and they gave to a farmer, once the production had come out, that farmer was entitled to give to the nearby neighbors the seeds to start with. And that's how Fidelis project multiplied, that what was produced by one person was given to the next person would produce, and then would give to the next person. And so that's how it went. Just to demonstrate that a bit further is that, for example, she got some donor to give some money for buying a milk goat, a goat that produces milk.
Yes.
For those who do not know, goats have got very good milk, very, very good milk. And, you know, sometimes scientists are telling us actually better than cow milk.
Okay.
Those goat milk in Kenya are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very expensive. For example, you can find one is going for 10,000. 10,000 Kenya shillings is a lot of money. And those goat milk have an advantage. They produce three times.
Wait, is the goat is 10,000 or the goat milk is 10,000?
The goat itself is about 10,000.
Okay, just to be clear.
And they also produce quite a bit of milk. It can produce 2 bottles of milk in the morning and maybe 2 bottles in the evening, which is 4 bottles of milk. So that's enough milk to bring up a family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those families, actually in the constituency, they couldn't afford cows in the first place.
And so how much is a cow?
A cow would be something like 30,000 Kenya shillings or more at the moment.
Okay, and just to give the exchange rate, what's the exchange rate of the Kenya shilling against the dollar? Just so people have an idea.
It's about 70 Kenya shillings to a dollar.
Okay, continue.
So she got a donor to give one goat milk. Mm-hmm. And as I've told you, a goat milk produces enough family for the milk. I mean, enough milk for the family. Morning, it gives a bottle.
Was she giving one goat milk or one goat?
She was given one goat.
One
goat. Produces milk.
Yes.
So she was given one goat.
Yes, okay.
And so she gave that goat to the family.
Yes.
And the contract was, this goat is going to produce three siblings in the year.
Yes.
And so when it produces the first sibling, you're going to give it to your neighbor.
Okay.
And then when that neighbor, the sibling grows up and produces a sibling, that neighbor will give it to the next neighbor.
Okay.
So this goat will produce three times a year,
but
you'll only give out one sibling to your neighbor.
Okay.
And so they got one goat
and
gave it to one farmer. And the farmer was taught how to take care of it so that it could produce enough milk for the family and it could produce three siblings in a year. And so that project started, and every time the goat produced a sibling, it would be given to the next neighbor. The next neighbor, Fidelis would teach them how to take care of those goats so that they could also produce enough milk and get the siblings, and then they would give to the next. And within 3-4 years, Fidelis had more than 200 goats, 200 families with 200 goats.
All in that
That's
same
what she said.
constituency.
From that one single goat
Huh?
that she had gotten from a donor. And that meant that more than 200 families in that constituency had enough milk and had three goat milks, goats per year. Because the goats are producing three siblings.
Yep. In a year. Yep.
And therefore means that family is able to sell sell three goats a year worth 30,000 Kenya shillings. Now, if you think in terms of Kenya shillings, 30,000 Kenya shillings is enough. It's more than enough to educate about two or three children in Kenya. So meaning that those families just using that one project of the goats would be able to take their children comfortably to school. And at the same time, they were able to get enough milk, enough calcium for their children.
And that is all in that one constituency she started in. By the way, could you give the name of that constituency?
It was in Maseno. She was operating in Maseno.
Okay.
And her project was actually called MICH, which I think means Maseno, I'm not sure what it means.
I think it's Maseno Inter-Christian Self-Help. Yeah, that name escapes me, but it's something to do with Maseno Inter-Christian
Self-Help.
I forget the full name. I'll put it on the website anyway.
On the web, yeah, that's exactly what happened. So by the time Fidelis passed away, that whole constituency, almost everybody had a goat. Not a goat, but many goats, because that is, that's how the project operated, that you help me, I help my neighbor,
yes.
My neighbor helps the other neighbor, and it became, more of a, we ourselves helping, we as Africans helping ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I get help, I help you, and then we move on. The same happened with the bananas. They got the seeds from Kari, they produced in each, they would produce in one family, then that family would get, the plants, and then they would go to the next neighbor, they would be given to the next neighbor. So they didn't have to go back to the place or to the donors for more of the products. They themselves produced the products and they supplied. The same with the groundnuts.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the last time I was in Kenya, because I live in Australia, Fidelis was telling me she wants to buy a truck to export the bananas and the groundnuts to the city. Because her constituency had so much bananas and so much groundnuts, they were more than enough for what the families needed. So they needed to sell them. Now, when Fidelis was going there, she was going to help the families to be self-sufficient in food.
Mm-hmm.
But they had reached a stage whereby they were more than self-sufficient in terms of their own food.
Yes.
They had extra to sell. And I know by the time Fidelis died, they already had a truck that was helping to produce, to take those produce to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the project had become so big, so big and so self-supporting. That actually Fidelis kept on saying, Lois, we don't need donors in terms of money. We need donors in terms of skills.
So, and that's a message for everyone who is living abroad, who has a lot of skills, all the Rhodes Scholars and the Oxford graduates and the Harvards and the Yale graduates. I mean, if a woman like Fidelis trained in Africa can do just that in one constituency, can you imagine what someone who went to Harvard or Yale or Oxford can do if they, with just a bit of ingenuity and creativity?
Exactly. And Africa doesn't need money. Africa doesn't need money. Africa just needs people to take in the skills they have to help the people to be able to be self-sufficient in terms of the skills. Because when you keep on pouring money to people, they really don't appreciate it. But when you teach people to feed themselves, when you teach people this is how we farm, this is how we do bricks, this is how we build, let's say lambs or whatever on the ground level.
Build lambs.
Proud, yes?
Mommy, build lambs.
Build things that they can help themselves with. What I mean, Africa needs to be helped with the skills.
Yeah.
And that's what Fidelis kept on saying every time. Because she was preparing to come to Australia, and I was asking, Fidelis, what can I help in terms of preparing when you come? Mm-hmm. She said, Lois.
Oh, no, actually, could you just tell us a bit more about, she was actually planning to come to Australia this July. So just actually explain what that was for exactly.
Fidelis was to come to Australia. Actually, she was coming in Australia. She was coming in May because she was going to preach in with MyCAC Challenge. It's an organization that she was actually one of the directors. She was coming for their meetings sometimes in July.
Yes.
She was to come in May and stay with our family for a month or two before she starts her ministry with the MyCAC Challenge, which I'm not exactly very sure of what the plan of what they were doing with MyCAC Challenge, but all I know is that she was coming in May. And that's when I was asking her, now that you're coming to Australia, what would you want us to help in terms of your project?
Uh-huh.
And what she kept on telling me, Lois, if you can be able to source for me people who have skills, Like, for example, people who can teach people on the ground how to do bricks.
Yes.
So that people can be able to use to build better houses on the ground using bricks instead of the Africans use mud to build their houses. And those mud houses really don't last for long. Whereas, for example, in Australia, we use bricks to build houses, and you find those houses made of bricks, they can last even for 50 years. So she kept on saying, if she can get people to teach the people on the ground how to do bricks, or maybe how to do things like candles, how to do women in the village to do soaps for themselves, so that they can make soaps for their families, they can sell even those soaps. So what she was saying is that we actually don't need money. I don't want you to help me to get money for my project.
Yes.
I want the skills for my people.
So I'm just to let everyone know, mom is actually, she's a building developer. So did Fidelis want you to do that, or she just wanted you to find other people to do that?
She wanted me to find people who could help in terms of teaching people, like people who could agree to go to Kenya and teach them how to make these things, how to produce these bricks.
Okay.
Yes, that was really what she was looking for. People with the skills to go and reproduce the skills to the people on the ground in Africa.
Okay, so now that we've started talking about Micah, let's talk about how, thanks to her initiative in Maseno, her profile really grew. And she went from being basically, as per African standards anyway, from a nobody to a somebody.
When I left Kenya in 2002 to go come to Australia, Fidelis was actually a nobody. She was a struggling person, and of course, I supported her quite a lot because I knew she was in the ministry and I knew her vision was right. She had the heart for the people. Mm-hmm. So when I left in Kenya 2002, actually Fidelis was just starting that project because I think she had started it around 2000.
Yes.
So it was at a very young stage and nobody knew what she was doing. People just thought she's wasting her time down there with the rural people. Just she was confused, let me say. People would think that she was confused.
She
didn't have a vision.
Yes,
you know,
and of course, and she's also a single woman.
She was a single woman, almost 40 years old, husband, just there down there with the village, with village boys. What is she doing? So nobody really believed what she was doing.
Yes.
But as time went by, you know, her vision became more clearer to her. The project grew. People in the constituency started becoming, you know, wealthier. You know, people became self-sufficient in terms of they had food, and as I've said, you know, families had goat milk and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was recognized. There was a project in Norway that was checking out the best self-supporting community projects in Africa.
And actually,
projects that were being run
without
funds from abroad.
And just to be to let people know, it was actually associated with those Millennium Development Goals. I think it was actually associated with the UN.
It was a UN project, yes.
Yes, the Yara Prize.
The Yara Prize.
Yes.
Which was looking at projects which are self-sufficient. Because as we have said, even in terms of giving AIDS to Africa, a lot of money has been poured into Africa. But we can't see what it has done. Because that money has not come. It's not people doing the project. It's projects being done for them from outside.
Yes.
What Africa needs is projects that are self-generated, projects that people are involved in.
For us, by us.
People that they own, projects that they own.
Yes.
So when these women are growing groundnuts in their own little farms, that's their own project.
Yes.
When they have a goat that produces milk, that goat is theirs and the milk is theirs.
So that's what she was recognized for.
That's what, you know, Africa needs. And that's what Fidelis believed in, that projects which are self-generated by the Africans themselves, not money being brought, you know, from all over the world, being poured into Africa, and then when the donors leave, the projects die with them.
Yes.
Now, Fidelis has died, but her project is not going to die with her because it was not her project.
Yes.
That project belonged to the people.
Yes.
The project belongs to the community. And I remember during these clashes in Kenya in 2008, when there has been clashes.
Before we'll get to the clashes later. Actually, let's continue with the story of how her profile continued. So there's the Yara Prize in Norway. Yes. It's okay. It's a conversation. It flows.
I get emotional when I'm talking about Fidelis because...
Which is good. It is good.
She believed in what she did.
Yes.
She's a woman who believed in the people. She loved people. She loved what she did. She loved the Luo people. And she loved them with all her heart. So she was 2002 when we left Kenya. She was actually a nobody. But when this UN project was looking at all the whole of Africa, the projects that were self-supported, self-supporting, projects that did not require external donations per se, Fidelis managed her Fidelis project, not her, Fidelis herself, but the project that she had started got the first prize. Was as being the best project in Africa, self-supporting. And so all of a sudden, Fidelis grew from being a nobody to this international, you know, person.
Yeah. And by that, to people who'd never met Fidelis, she was a very soft-spoken person. So for you to say that she's all of a sudden a superstar,
She's a superstar.
it's very outside of the person you'd think
Yeah.
Fidelis is.
And there she got 7 million Kenyan shillings, as a prize. And, I remember going back, I went back maybe a year after she got a prize. And now here is Fidelis, a person who has never owned a car, a person even who doesn't have a bank account, a person who doesn't have a house, she rents a house, and she has this 7 million in the bank. And I'm discussing with Fidelis now that he has 7 million. What are you going to do with it? Can we share it out? And being a Kikuyu woman, of course, I was thinking how I could do business with that money of Fidelis. And then Fidelis told me, no, Lois, this money does not belong to me. It belongs to the project. She just said it as softly as she could because she was a very soft-spoken person.
Yes.
No, this money doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the project. It belongs to the people. It's not me who got it. It's because the people have worked so hard that we have gotten the money. And I told her, no. Fidelis, that is your money. It's you who got as a person. You are being recognized. What do you mean it belongs to the project? And of course, I couldn't believe.
Continue.
No, that money did not belong to the project. It belonged to Fidelis. Fidelis so emphatically told me, Lois, no.
Uh-huh.
I've actually put that money in the project bank account
uh-huh.
because I don't even have a bank account anyway, for one. And number two, I want to buy a truck to take the produce of my people, of the people in the project,
uh-huh.
to the market in the city.
Uh-huh.
And then if there's a remainder, we will see what to do with it in the project, but that not money is not my project. I was just so humbled by Fidelis' attitude that she was not in this project for money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was for money, she had gotten it. 7 million is a lot of money in Kenya. She could just have dropped the project and move on to some great things.
Yeah.
But as far as project Fidelis
she moved on
was
to
concerned,
the greatest thing, really.
She was not in the project for the money. She was in the project to see people's lives transformed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Until the time Fidelis died, she actually didn't own a personal car per se. She had a project car. She didn't own money per se. You can say that she has left in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
She worked for the people. She lived for the people. And she saw the people prosper. And that was her heart.
I mean, I think after listening to someone like that, I hope a lot of people have really, really been challenged to see just what is possible. I mean, this woman started with basically, by African standards, not much, if anything. Single woman, no money, poor, jobless, and she managed to do all these things. So now, just before she died, of course, the violence broke out in Kenya, the post-election violence. And of course, Fidelis, of course, is a Kikuyu woman. And the violence, a lot of it was basically aimed at Kikuyus, basically. It was basically a project. A lot of it was just revenge against the Kikuyus, so to speak. So what was Fidelis' reaction to this? And what were Fidelis' plans for the future in light of this?
Yeah, I called Fidelis just once the violence broke out because I was a bit concerned because she's a very good friend of mine over the years. She's been a lovely lady. And so I immediately, the election, that was on 29th of December 2007, after the results were announced on 31st,
mm-hmm.
The violence broke out. All the other tribes against the Kikuyus. And so, of course, I was concerned what has happened to Fidelis because she lives among the Luos,
mm-hmm.
and that's where she was. And so I remember I called her just that very first week,
mm-hmm.
just to find out where she was. And I found her. She had left Kisumu. She was in Nakuru with her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, so Fidelis, what happened? Were you hurt or anything? And, she told me, Lois, I wasn't hurt and the people were not against me or anything. Because the best thing about it is that people all have owned the project.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it was their project, they didn't burn anything that belonged to the project.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't burn the buildings. They didn't burn the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
They actually didn't destroy anything because they owned the project.
Which is very, very interesting because just for people who don't know, like a lot of people like to say that the Luos, they basically burnt their own place. That apparently, all the Luos, because they burnt trains, they looted businesses, and they basically went around Kisumu and they really destroyed Kisumu, which is where the Luos are from. But it's interesting that, I mean, a project that they actually owned and they worked on, they actually didn't destroy. So that actually puts that idea very much, it challenges that idea very much because they really didn't destroy what was theirs. In this case,
it was hard for them It was hard for the people from Kisumu to destroy that project because, as I've said, the project was within people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
The project, Fidelis project, was within their homes. They only had the building where they used to do demonstrations, but most of the project was within their own homes.
You have another call on the other line, yes?
Just hold on 1 minute.
Okay.
This is Rose speaking. Okay, I will. Yeah. I know the address. I know it. Okay. Yeah.
And so it was very encouraging for Fidelis to tell me that she was very happy to know that the people in Kisumu owned the project. They knew it was their project.
Yes.
And nothing in the project was destroyed. And even Fidelis didn't leave Kisumu because she was being threatened.
Mm.
She only left because she had had an operation over Christmas, just before 25th.
Yes.
Before Christmas time, she had had an operation in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And so even this time when the elections are taking place, she was actually recuperating from her sickness. She had a stomach problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so her friends just thought, with all this violence going on, she was better off just to go to her mother's place to wait for the situation to stabilize.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody sent an army vehicle to go and pick her and just drop her at the airport, just because we were not sure. People were not sure of which direction, the violence was going to take.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Now here she is. She's not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically she didn't leave because she has been threatened. The people in that area owned the project and they owned Fidelis as their own person.
They even had a name for her. I've linked to this on the website, but they actually had a name for her. I think it was Nya Okuyu, I'm unsure. Mm-hmm. But I know they definitely had a name for her, a Luo name for her.
Yeah, and it would be very interesting just to go and interview some of the people on the ground just to find out, how did Fidelis impact them? Because when you went to the ground is when you'd have realized exactly the impact that Fidelis had in that particular constituency. And after she got that prize, she became a world speaker because, every time I've gone, she's either going to speak to Canadian parliamentarians, she speaks in the UN, she has been speaking to Israel. Like, for example, she was coming to Australia after going to Israel to speak. So she has actually been an international speaker for the last 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that most of the places she has been going, like when she went, she has been going to speak to the Canadian parliamentarians, is because Canada wants to know, how can we, wherever we are fighting in Africa, how can we replicate what you have in Kenya in the countries that we are funding in Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Because the West is so fed up of just pouring money in Africa, and it doesn't ever seem to see like the poverty is getting out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But as you have said, Fidelis project is one project that had helped people, brought people out of poverty into a situation whereby they were not rich people, but
mm-hmm.
they were self-sufficient in terms of their daily needs. They had enough to take their children
yes.
to school. And so most of the Western government were looking at Fidelis project in Kenya as an example to be reproduced in other places in the world.
So did they want her to? So did she want to just continue her speaking tour, or what were her plans exactly? As she was recuperating, as she lay there recuperating in Nakuru.
So after the violence again, I spoke to her like 2 or 3 times just before she passed away. And when she was in Nakuru, what she was telling me is that because at the moment she was feeling she had done enough in Kisumu, and the people were able to move on. With or without her, the project was there. It had become people's project. So she wanted to reproduce the same project in Nakuru. She was actually looking for an office in Nakuru.
Mm-hmm.
She was starting the project in Nakuru with 2 aims. To do exactly what the Kisumu project was doing, but secondly, she felt there was so much anger and bitterness among the people in Kenya, that
mm-hmm.
after the violence had erupted. And so she was trying to put in the arm of reconciliation
mm-hmm.
to that project. And so just before she died, she had those 2 aims, to start the self-sufficiency
mm-hmm.
and the reconciliation arm in her project.
And how did she want to achieve the reconciliation arm of the project?
She hadn't come up with any sort of plan because, she's just died just 2 months after the violence had broken out. So
mm-hmm.
she was still at the stage of thinking, how can we get our people to again get to be one again with all this violence?
Mm-hmm.
So she hadn't come up with a project per se of how to do it. But it's one of those things that she had seriously started thinking about, that, this is what I want to do. I want to see Kenya again thrive as one nation and as one people. And she herself, having been a woman who had come outside Kisumu and having worked among the Kisumu people and seen the impact she could have, She didn't see why Kenyans had to fight among themselves. So the last time I spoke to her, because she was still very unwell, she hadn't gotten around it to see how to go about it. But I believe it was in the pipeline.
Okay, so let's touch briefly on her death. So she died on the 5th of March, which is a little over a month ago as I'm recording this. Today is the 13th of April, so she died a little over a month ago. So just talk a bit about how she died.
I don't know how to talk about Fidelis' death because it's just one of the saddest things that happened. And, you know, even now it's a bit hard to deal with it because I know a friend of mine was here in February who was living with us in our house for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And when she left, I told her, I'm not going to pack up this bedroom of yours because Fidelis is coming in 2 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had already set up a bedroom for her where she was going to spend a month or two with us. And so when I talk in terms of her death, even now, I actually haven't come to the grasp that Fidelis has died. In my mind, I still think it hasn't happened. But I know, okay, she had the operation in December, and when I spoke to her, it had gone on well. And actually, I called her the day she got the results from the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then she told me, you know, I asked her, Fidelis, have you gotten back your results to see whether whatever was in the stomach was cancerous or not? And she had her results with her on her hands, and she told me, Lois, my results are saying they are benign. What is benign? Oh, I saw it. Praise God, you know.
Mm.
Benign means they are not cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
They had removed some fibroids from her stomach. And so the doctor had given her clear they were benign.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I told her they're benign, we screamed on the phone, both of us, and were so happy and said, oh, yeah, you don't even need to go and see a doctor. You are clear. At least thank God that you are well. But anyway, I'm sure she went to the doctor thereafter. But I know that day, you know, I slept well knowing that, you know, the fibroids were okay. They've been discovered earlier. And just maybe a month after I spoke to her, the next time I called, a month after that, a friend of mine, my cousin who is in the U.S. just said, calls me and tells me, you know what, Fidelis is in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And here is her brother's number. And I was given the brother's number and I called. That is a month after I spoke to her and she had her results as benign.
Mm-hmm.
And I found her brother who told me that, you know, she had been taken to hospital, Aga Khan Hospital, on Tuesday because she was feeling unwell.
Aga Khan Hospital in Nairobi.
In Nairobi?
Yes.
And when she went, she was speaking and she was well. But now they had diagnosed that she had some cancer of the brain and the cancer had gone to the lungs and the cancer had affected a lot of other parts of her body.
Mm-hmm.
And at that particular point when I called, which was 3 days, I think, after she had been in hospital, she was not even speaking. And so I couldn't speak to her because I was told she's in ICU.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I could do, the best I could do was just to mobilize. I sent one SMS to all my dear friends who I know could pray. And I told them, please pray for a dear friend of mine who is in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just pray for her healing. And that was 3 days after she was admitted in hospital. I called the following day. She was still not talking. I called the day after. She was still not talking. And I think less than a week.
Mm-hmm.
After she was admitted in our kind hospital, she was dead. That was how quick her cancer came.
Yeah, amazing, huh?
It's unbelievable that cancer can kill within a week, less than a week. Because, you know, a month before, we knew she was clear. She had been declared clear of her stomach cancer. And yet, a month later, we are told, her whole body almost is cancerous. It's just unbelievable. And I still can't understand how that could happen.
Okay. So I think that we've pretty much we've covered the life of Fidelis from when, of course, you and Fidelis met up all the way until her death. And what I'm hoping with this interview is that it will really challenge and inspire people. I mean, a lot of people have way more benefits and advantages than Fidelis ever did. Fidelis, she died a single woman, never got married. And she was poor and she managed to achieve all these things. And basically, we are very blessed people. And I know a lot of intelligent people, and I know there are a lot more intelligent people out there who can achieve a lot. So I hope this story of Fidelis has really inspired you to see what is possible and what you can really do for your fellow man. So, Mami, thank you. Thank you very much. I know this interview will help a lot of people. So thank you, Mom.
I think the final message I would like to tell all the Africans out there in the diaspora, Africa needs you. Africa does not need your money.
Yes.
It needs your knowledge. It needs your brains. The people in Africa, all they need is to be encouraged and to be involved in every project that involves them. So the Africans, you're many of you out there in the diaspora, there are many, many Africans who are brilliant. Your brains and your knowledge is what Africa needs.
Yes.
Africa does not need your money.
Yes.
It needs your brains and your knowledge to go and replicate it among your own people. That's the only way we'll get poverty out of Africa.
That's a perfect way to end it. Thank you, Mom.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.